bridge of the Enterprise, the crew watch Spock intently as he peers into his data scanner. Kirk stands behind him.
No doubt about it, Captain. The space debris comes from the survey vessel, the SS Beagle.
Missing for 6 years, now this junk in space.
Portions of the antimatter nacelles, and personal belongings. Captain, no signs of bodies whatsoever.
Then whatever destroyed the ship, the crew was able to get off safely. Navigator, compute the present drift of the wreckage.
Computed and on the board, sir.
Mr. Spock, assuming that the wreckage drifted at the same speed and direction for the past 6 years...
It would have come from Planet 4, Star System 892, directly ahead.
Only 1/16 parsec away, Captain. We should be there in seconds.
Standard orbit around planet. There may be survivors there.
SS Beagle, small class 4, star drive vessel, crew of 47, commanded by... Jim, I believe you knew him. Captain R.M. Merrick.
Yes, at the Academy. He was dropped in his fifth year. He went into the merchant service.
Coming up on the planet, Captain.
Put it on the screen.
A blue planet with patches of brown landmass.
Definitely class M. Somewhat similar to Earth.
Yeah, similar. The land masses and oceans are quite different, aren't they?
Different in shape only, Captain. The proportion of land to water is exactly as on your Earth. Density, 5.5. Diameter, 7917 at the equator. Atmosphere, 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen. Again, exactly like Earth.
Exactly in some ways, different in others.
I also picked up indications of large cities.
What era?
No sign of atomic power as yet, but far enough along for radio communications, power transportation, an excellent road system.
Captain, both amplitude and frequency modulation being used. I think I can pick up something visual. It's a news broadcast using a system I think they once called video.
Television was the colloquial term.
Put it on the screen.
A black and white TV picture appears.
Police rounded up still another group of dissidents. Authorities are as yet unable to explain these fresh outbreaks of treasonable disobedience by well-treated, well-protected, intelligent slaves. Now turning to the world of sports and bringing you the taped results of the arena games last night. The first heat involved amateurs. They're petty thieves from city prison, conducted, however, with traditional weapons that provided some amusement for a few moments. In the second heat, a slightly more professional display in the spirit of our splendid past when gladiator Claudius Marcus killed the last of the barbarians, William B. Harrison, in an excellent example of...
Transmission lost, sir. Shall I try to get it back?
Slaves. And gladiator. What are we seeing? 20th century Rome?
Captain, the one described as the barbarian is also listed here. Flight officer William B. Harrison of the SS Beagle. At least there were some survivors down there.
Ready the transporter room, Mr. Spock. We're beaming down. Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. Bread and Circuses, written by Gene Roddenberry and Gene L. Coon, directed by Ralph Sinensky. Kirk, Spock and McCoy materialize on a hill.
You could have selected a more convenient place, Mr. Spock.
But hardly more practical, Captain. Close to the city we located, but not populated. We should not be observed.
Kirk leads the way as they walk in single file down the arid hillside with its thin covering of brown grass and shrubs. At the bottom of the slope, they take in their surroundings. Spock checks the readings on his tricorder.
Fasten. This atmosphere is remarkably similar to your 20th century. Moderately industrialized pollution, containing substantial amounts of carbon monoxide, and partially consumed hydrocarbons.
The word was smog.
Yes, I believe that was the term. I had no idea you were that much of a historian, Doctor.
I am not, Mr. Spock. I was simply trying to stop you from giving us a whole lecture on the subject. Jim, is there anything at all we know about this planet?
The SS Beagle was the first ship to make a survey of the star sector when it disappeared.
Then the Prime Directive is in full force, Captain?
No identification of self-omission. No interference with the social development of said planet.
No references to space or the fact that there are other worlds or more advanced civilizations.
Let's go.
Dusty gray earth clings to their boots as they walk.
Once, just once, I'd like to be able to land someplace and say, behold, I am the Archangel Gabriel.
I fail to see the humor in that situation, Doctor.
Naturally. You could hardly claim to be an angel with those pointed ears, Mr. Spock. But say you landed someplace with a pitchfork.
Don't move! Hands in the air!
Slowly, they raise their arms.
Complete Earth parallel. The language here is English.
I said don't move!
I think he means it, Spock.
There would seem to be evidence to that effect.
In the distance, four figures emerge from behind a group of large boulders, their guns trained on the landing party. Keeping their rifles trained on them, the four disheveled men run up and surround Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Who are you?
We come from another province.
The hard-faced, dark-haired man goes over to Spock.
Where are you from? What do you call those?
I call them ears.
Are you trying to be funny?
Never. Colloquial 20th century English. An amazing parallel.
We come from a place that's quite some journey from here. I doubt if you've even heard...
Uniforms. Probably some new Praetorian Guard unit. I should kill you here. But Septimus would probably be displeased. Move.
Move!
The four men, who wear grey t-shirts and tattered trousers, lead the landing party away. Later, a lookout standing on a mountaintop signals as he sees the party approaching. Two similarly dressed men appear from a cave. The leader of the armed party approaches an older man with cropped grey hair.
I didn't harm them, Septimus, as much as I wanted to.
Keep always in your mind, Flavius, that our way is peace.
For which we are grateful.
For we are men of peace ourselves.
Oh? Are you children of the sun?
Well, if you're speaking of worships of sorts, we represent many beliefs.
There is only one true belief. Roman butchers, sent here by the First Citizen.
Do we look like any Romans you ever saw?
Then are you slaves like ourselves?
Our people don't believe in slavery.
A Roman lie. We must kill them.
Sir, we came here looking for some friends. 47 of them who were stranded here some 6 years ago. They wore clothing similar to ours. Have you heard of such men?
Septimus, I know killing is evil, but sometimes it's necessary.
No.
But they've located us, our hiding place. It's better to kill a few of them than all of us.
Wait. I can prove we're telling the truth. A small device. I'll take it out slowly. Kirk to Enterprise. Come in.
Scotty here, Captain.
Scotty. Lock in on my transmission beam. Scan us.
Scanning, sir.
Including ourselves. How many of us are there?
12, Captain.
Good, Scotty. Continue scanning. We'll maintain transmission. Kirk out. The Enterprise is our ship, somewhere at sea. That's all I can tell you. If it isn't sufficient, You will have to kill us.
Septimus turns to the younger, dark-haired man.
Tell me the Empire has a device like that, Flavius, and you may kill them. Otherwise, accept them as friends.
He makes Flavius lower his weapon and goes back into the cave. Kirk and the others follow.
Captain's log, stardate 4040.7. On the surface of planet 4, system 892, the landing party has won the confidence of what obviously is a group of runaway slaves. They dwell in caves not far from a large city, wear rags, live under primitive conditions, but they are creatures of a heavily industrialized 20th century type planet, very much like Earth. An amazing example of Hodgkin's law of parallel planet development. But on this Earth, Rome never fell. A world ruled by emperors who can trace their line back 2,000 years to their own Julius and Augustus Caesars.
No, Captain. I'm sure I would have heard of the arrival of other men like you.
Perhaps you've heard, let's say, an impossible story or a rumor of men who came from the sky or from other worlds.
There are no other worlds.
The stars.
Lights shining through from heaven. It is where the sun is. Blessed be the sun.
Yes, of course.
Spock proffers Kirk a magazine.
Captain, I thought you might find this interesting.
It's called The Galleon. Kirk flicks through it and stops at a car advert.
Spock?
Fascinating.
The Jupiter 8. Conventional internal combustion engine. You were right about the smog. But the Jupiter 8? Mars toothpaste? Neptune bath salts?
Taken from the names of false gods. When I was a senator, I worshipped them too. But I heard the words of the sun. I became a brother. For that, they made me a slave.
Septimus, we need your help. We must go into the city. We know that one of our missing friends was seen there recently.
My advice to you is to leave. Go back where you came from.
We can't do that. Perhaps you know his name. Merrick. Captain Merrick.
Merrickus?
The other slaves gather round Kirk menacingly. He gets to his feet.
Yes, he's the leader of our friends.
Merrickus is first citizen. Butcher.
That doesn't sound like the same man.
Captain, a logical question, if I may. Septimus, how many years ago did Merrickus become your first citizen?
Perhaps 5 years.
Almost six. I was there when he became Lord of the Games. If he is your friend, you are no friends of ours.
Septimus, wherever we may be from, you must believe that it is one of our most important laws that none of us interfere with the affairs of others. If Captain Merrick is Merrickus, then he has violated that law and he must be taken away and punished. Will you help us to get to the truth of all this?
First, I must discuss it with the others.
The men go from the cave, leaving a female slave who sits quietly in a corner. Spock turns to Kirk.
Curious, Captain. The similarity in names. Were you told why Merrick was dropped from the Space Academy?
He failed his psychosimulator test. All it takes is a split second of indecision. Hardly the type to become a political strongman.
Odd that these people should worship the sun. Why, Doctor?
Because, my dear Mr. Spock, it is illogical. Rome had no sun worshippers. Why should they parallel Rome in every way except one?
The men come back into the cave.
We have decided. Flavius will guide you. We will provide you with suitable clothing. I caution you, take great care. The police are everywhere. May the blessings of the sun be upon you.
Sometime later, Kirk, McCoy, and Spock, whose pointed ears are covered by a hat, are disguised in the worn gray clothes of the slaves. The bright sun beats down on them as Flavius leads them across the sun-baked hills. They crouch behind the slim, grey trunks of a tree.
We'll wait here until dark.
Are you a slave, Flavius?
You are barbarians indeed. Not to know of Flavius Maximus. For 7 years, I was the most successful gladiator in this province.
Then you heard the word of the sun.
Yes. Words of peace and freedom. It wasn't easy for me to believe. I was trained to fight. But the words are true.
There are many things I'd like to know.
Hold! Don't move! Hands in the air!
Two police guards, armed with submachine guns and wearing white helmets, tan jackets and black trousers tucked into black boots, round the party up and lead them over to their sergeant, who's flanked by two more armed guards.
Four fleeing fish, a fine haul. Flavius Maximus.
Flavius goes for him, but he's clubbed to the ground by the other guards.
You have been too long absent from the games, Flavius. The First Citizen will be pleased.
The sergeant looks over the landing party.
Runaway slaves are always welcome.
He takes off Spock's hat, revealing his pointed ears.
Oh, not slaves. Barbarians. Been a long time since I've watched barbarians die in the arena.
Captain's log, stardate 4040.9. Uniformed police like those of Earth. A great city like Rome with automobiles. Astonishing similarities to 20th century Earth, down to the fine carbon steel in the bars.
A guard unlocks a barred cell, and Spock and McCoy help Flavius inside. Kirk starts to follow them, then turns back to the sergeant.
Tell Maricus I'd like to see him.
The First Citizen? Why would he bother with arena bait like you?
Tell him it's Jim Kirk. Perhaps a friend.
Perhaps?
Well, if I am a friend, and you don't tell him, do you really want to risk that?
The sergeant's smile falls, and he locks the cell door. Later, Kirk watches McCoy tend to a wound on the back of Flavius's head. Spock paces the cell.
But if there have been slaves for over 2,000 years, hasn't there always been discontent, runaways?
Long ago, there were rebellions, but they were suppressed. And with each century, the slaves acquired more rights under the law. They received rights to medicine, the right to government payments in their old age. And they slowly learned to be content.
Even more fascinating, slavery evolving into an institution with guaranteed medical payments, old age pensions.
Quite logical, I'd say, Mr. Spock. Just as it's logical that 20th century Rome would use television to show its gladiator contest, or name a new car the Jupiter 8.
Doctor, if I were able to show emotion, your new infatuation with that term would begin to annoy me.
What term?
Logic.
Medical men are trained in logic, Mr. Spock.
Really, Doctor? I had no idea they were trained. Watching you, I assumed it was trial and error.
Are they enemies, Captain?
I'm not sure they're sure. When the slaves began to worship the sun, they became discontent again. When did all this happen?
Long ago. Perhaps as long ago as the beginning of the Empire. The message of the sun, that all men are brothers, was kept from us. Perhaps I'm a fool to believe it. It does often seem that man must fight to live.
You go on believing it, Flavius. All men are brothers.
The sergeant strides up to their cell. One of the armed guards unlocks it, and the sergeant swings the door open.
Flavius!
Flavius, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy all stand.
Your friends are waiting for you. You've already been matched for the morning games. Come.
I will not fight. I am a brother of the sun.
Put a sword in your hand and you'll fight. I know you, Flavius. You're as peaceful as a bull.
Flavius steps into the corridor with a sigh and is led away by two guards.
You three come with us.
Three against three. We may never have a better chance.
No talking. Outside.
I doubt if he'll get very far. He feels ill.
I do.
Outside.
All right, but he'll double over before we get very far.
Oh, I think I can walk. I'll try.
Ooh!
McCoy dramatically doubles over. The sergeant follows the two guards into the cell. Spock, McCoy, and Kirk attack them and steal their weapons.
Let's go.
Well done, Jim.
A sandy-haired, blue-eyed man in an orange tunic stands outside the cell.
Well, I'm afraid it isn't that easy. They've been handling slaves here for 2,000 years.
But it was exciting. They'd do well in the arena.
Captain Merrick, is it?
Yes, it's me. This is our proconsul, Claudius Marcus.
But this is no place for a reunion.
This way. Your friends, too.
Armed guards follow them as they walk towards Merrick and Claudius, who wears a shimmering gray tunic.
There's lots to talk about. Lots to explain.
I agree.
Don't judge me before you know the facts. Come on, we can talk freely here. The proconsul knows who and what we are.
Merrick leads the way, and the others follow. Later, they step into a large, pillared room decorated with animal skins and marble statues.
You can leave us. Well, a celebration. A meeting of old friends.
Prepare food for our friends. They've come from a great distance. Great distance indeed. So this is a Vulcan. Interesting. From what I've heard, I wish I had 50 of you for the arena.
This other is your ship surgeon?
McCoy.
It's a pity we can't let him loose in our hospitals. Our level of medicine would improve immeasurably, I'm sure.
Come, you must be hungry.
Gentlemen.
They all sit around a circular glass table. A blonde female slave proffers Claudius a tray of food. He turns to Kirk.
Oh, try the sparrow, broiled and garruped. Delicious. Or perhaps some of this roast kid. Lovely thing, isn't she?
All right. What happened?
We had meteor damage, Jim. I went ashore with the landing party to look for iridium ore for repairs, and I met this gentleman.
Go on.
He convinced me it would be unfair to this world to carry word of their existence elsewhere.
Contamination. Can't risk that. You'll understand as you learn more about us.
So I made the decision to stay.
What happened to your crew? Did they voluntarily come ashore?
This is an ordered world, Jim. A conservative world based on time-honored Roman strengths and virtues.
What happened to your crew?
There's been no war here for over 400 years, Jim. Could, let's say, your land of that same era make that same boast? I think you can see why they don't want to have their stability contaminated by dangerous ideas of other ways and other places.
Interesting. And given a conservative empire, quite understandable.
Are you out of your head?
I said I understood it, Doctor. I find the checks and balances of this civilization quite illuminating.
Next, he'll be telling us he prefers it over Earth history.
They do seem to have escaped the carnage of your first three world wars, Doctor.
They have slavery, gladiatorial games, despotism.
Situations quite familiar to the 6 million who died in your first world war, the 11 million who died in your second, the 37 million who died in your third. Shall I go on?
Interesting. And you, Captain, which world do you prefer?
My world, Proconsul, is my vessel, my oath, my crew. What happened to your vessel? You've explained. What happened to your oath is obvious.
And as for my men, those that were able to adapt to this world are still alive. Those who couldn't adapt are dead. That's the way it is with life everywhere, isn't it?
You sent your own men into the arena?
Just as I did, Jim. You're going to order your own people ashore.
You must know that's impossible. Starfleet regulations are designed to circumvent any such order. There may be over 400 men on your ship, Captain, but they can be brought down if it's handled properly. Say, a few at a time. You see, I have the advantage of a trained ship captain to tell me what is and what is not possible. Your communicator, Captain Kirk.
Claudius holds out Kirk's communicator.
That do save us all a lot of unnecessary trouble and issue the appropriate orders.
They're going to be arriving soon anyway, Jim. A recon party, then a rescue party, then another rescue party. I had less men. It added up the same.
Do you really believe I can be made to order my own people down? I believe this, Captain, that you would do almost anything rather than see these two dear friends put slowly to death.
Again, Claudius holds out the communicator. Kirk takes it.
Jim. Kirk Enterprise.
Bridge. Scott here.
Scotty, if you have a fix...
Guards armed with submachine guns surround Kirk.
Stand by, Scotty.
Very wise of you, Captain. No point in sending up bullet-ridden corpses.
Yet, on the other hand, my chief engineer is standing by for a message.
I do hope so, for your sake. Now, Captain, what are you going to order your men to do?
If I brought down 100 of them armed with phasers, you could probably defeat the combined armies of our entire empire
and violate your oath regarding non-interference with other societies. I believe you all swear you'd die before you'd violate that directive. Am I right?
Quite correct.
Must you always be so blasted honest?
But on the other hand, why even bother to send your men down? From what I understand, your vessel could lay waste to the entire surface of the world. Oh, but there's that prime directive in the way again. Can't interfere.
Jim, you've already started a message. Your engineer is waiting. What are you going to do?
Everyone's eyes are on Kirk. He stares ahead for a moment, then flips open his communicator.
Scotty, sorry to keep you waiting.
We were becoming concerned, Captain. You were a bit overdue.
Order your officers to come down.
Condition green, all's well, Kirk out.
Claudius stands up angrily.
Guards, take them. Prepare them for the games.
That was stupid, Jim.
This is not an academy training test. This is for real. They're taking you to die.
Kirk gives Merrick a contemptuous stare, then joins Spock and McCoy as they're led away by the armed guards. Claudius rubs his chubby hands pensively as he watches them leave.
Ship's log. Stardate 4041.2. Chief Engineer Scott recording. Captain Kirk and his landing party have checked in, but they have used the code term Condition Green, which means they're in trouble. But it also prohibits my taking any action. Mr. Chekhov, pinpoint power source locations, type power load factors, and how much our beams will have to pull to overload them.
That may take some time.
Let it take time, lad. They're in trouble, and I'm under orders not to interfere. However, no order can stop me from frightening them. May do no good, but it may suggest to someone just what a starship can really do.
On the planet's surface, a television crew are broadcasting from a set of a gladiatorial arena, complete with fake pillars and a 2D backdrop of Rome.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Live and direct from City Arena and in color, we bring you Name the Winner, brought to you tonight by your Jupiter 8 dealers from coast to coast. In just a moment, tonight's first heat.
We're in a tape commercial, Proconsul, for 40 seconds, then we'll be back live.
Claudius signals his approval as he and Merrick take their seats beside the arena. Kirk, with his wrists cuffed in front of him, is led to a seat between them. Large gates leading into the arena slide open. Spock and McCoy walk out into the arena, carrying swords and shields, followed by two armed guards in full Roman armor.
Stand by, 10 seconds. And first tonight, ladies and gentlemen, a surprise extra. In the far corner, a pair of highly aggressive barbarians. Strong, intelligent, with strange ways, and I'm sure full of a lot of surprises. And facing them, two favorites here from previous encounters, Achilles and Flavius.
The applause is coming from a machine operated by a sound engineer.
Victory or death? And for which of them? Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know just as much about that at this moment as I do, because this is your program. You name the winner.
Flavius and Achilles are bare-chested and wear short leather skirts and long boots. They salute Claudius and Merrick, then two guards place helmets on their heads. McCoy and Spock are led into the arena.
I don't mind fighting, but why you?
Begin!
Achilles goes for Spock, who blocks him. McCoy and Flavius face each other awkwardly.
Flavius may be getting off to a slow start, but he's never disappointed this crowd. There's a close one. The barbarian with a pointed ear seems to be in trouble now.
Achilles corners Spock.
I tell you, I'm well able to defeat you.
Fight, barbarian!
Merrick stares coldly ahead.
Most of my men went the same way. I hoped I would feel it less with yours.
Spock traps Achilles' sword with his own.
I do not want to injure you.
Flavius and McCoy half-heartedly point their swords at each other. The sound engineer turns up the catcalls. A guard whips Flavius.
Fight, you fool!
You bring this network's ratings down, Flavius, and we'll do a special on you.
McCoy and Flavius strike each other's shields. Keeping his eyes on the arena, Kirk leans over to Claudius.
Question, Captain?
The rules. If Spock should finish his man off first, would he be able to help?
We believe men should fight their own battles. Only the weak will die. My word is a Roman.
Spock struggles to fight off Achilles.
Ready to order your men down, Captain?
Kirk watches his friends with concern.
Maybe now you understand why I gave in, Jim. The Romans have always been the strongest. And they've had practice for over 2,000 years in enslaving men, using them, killing them.
Quite true, Captain Kirk. The games have always strengthened us. Death becomes a familiar pattern. We don't fear it as you do.
The sound engineer turns up the booze and Flavius is whipped again. He turns to McCoy.
At least defend yourself.
I am defending myself.
Not like that, you fool. Hold your weapon higher.
McCoy does so. Flavius fights more aggressively.
Admit it, you find these games frightening, revolting.
Kirk grins slyly at Claudius.
For a consul, in some parts of the galaxy, I have seen forms of entertainment that makes this look like a folk dance.
Claudius's smug smile vanishes. Spock skillfully fends off Achilles.
Certain this isn't different, Captain. Those are your men dying, not strangers.
I've had to select men to die before so that others could be saved.
You're a clever liar, Captain Kirk. Maricus was a spaceship, Captain. I've observed him thoroughly. Your species has no such strength.
He commands not just a spaceship, Proconsul, but a starship. A very special vessel and crew. I tried for such a command.
I see no evidence of superiority. They fight no better than your men did, Maricus. Perhaps not as well.
McCoy's sword connects with Flavius's shield. Achilles pursues Spock, who backs away from him.
Stop running! Fight!
Need any help, Doctor?
Whatever gave you that idea?
Fight, you pointed ear freak!
Cannon Buster! All the completely ridiculous, illogical questions I ever heard in my life!
Flavius swings at McCoy, who falls onto his back. Flavius stands over him, holding his sword to McCoy's chest. Spock knocks Achilles out and goes to help McCoy. Spock gives Flavius a Vulcan nerve pinch and he falls to the floor. Guards see Spock and McCoy.
Clear foul, Proconsul. Your decision?
Your opinion, Maricus, after all, they're like yourself.
Mericus glances at them, then turns to Claudius.
It's your decision, Proconsul.
Your opinion, Captain Kirk. You'd like me to kill them now? An easy death? Then you'd gladly accept whatever happens to you.
Kirk stares defiantly ahead.
Take them back to their cage.
Well, it won't go that easily for them, Captain. Nor for you.
Merrick looks away, uneasy.
Take him to my quarters.
Merrick follows after Claudius. Lost in thought, Kirk is pushed after them by the two guards. Kirk, no longer wearing handcuffs, is let into Claudius' quarters by two guards, who promptly leave, closing the door behind them. Kirk steps further into the room and looks around. Claudius' blonde servant appears, wearing a revealing gold dress.
I was told to wait for you. I provide wine, food, whatever you wish. I am Proconsul Slave Drusilla, although for this evening...
She looks up at him coyly.
For this evening, I was told I am your slave. Command me.
Lost for words, Kirk checks behind him, then turns back to her. He slowly walks over to the beautiful blonde and stands in front of her.
It won't work.
What will not work?
Whatever he has in mind, whatever tricks. You hear that, Proconsul? It won't work. I'm not cooperating. I may die, but you won't get any entertainment out of it.
We're alone. Please believe me. I've never lied to one who owns me.
Down in the cells, Spock tries to prise the bars of the door apart with his bare hands. It doesn't work. He runs his hands over the lock, feeling for a weakness. McCoy watches him from the back of the cell. Spock slams the bars in annoyance.
Angry, Mr. Spock, or frustrated, perhaps?
Such emotions are foreign to me, Doctor. I'm merely testing the strength of the door.
For the 15th time.
Spock traces his hand along the stone where the barred grill meets the wall. His interest is taken by a section near the bottom of the bars. He prods it thoughtfully. McCoy walks over.
Spock.
Still inspecting the bars, Spock gets to his feet.
Spock, I know we've had our disagreements. Maybe they're jokes. I don't know. As Jim says, we're not often sure ourselves sometimes. But what I'm trying to say is...
Doctor, I'm seeking a means of escape. Will you please be brief?
Well, what I'm trying to say is you saved my life in the arena.
Yes, that's quite true.
I'm trying to thank you, you pointed-eared hobgoblin!
Oh, yes, you humans have that emotional need to express gratitude.
You're welcome, I believe, is the correct response. However, Doctor, you must remember that I'm entirely motivated by logic. The loss of our ship's surgeon, whatever I may think of his relative skill, would mean a reduction in the efficiency of the Enterprise, and therefore...
Oh, why, you're not afraid to die, Spock. You're more afraid of living. Each day you stay alive is just one more day you might slip and let your human half peek out.
Spock turns away from him.
That's it, isn't it? And security. Why, you wouldn't know what to do with a genuine, warm, decent feeling.
Raising his eyebrows, Spock turns to McCoy with apparent indifference.
Really, Doctor?
I know. I'm worried about Jim, too.
Gripping the cell bars, Spock slowly turns away from him. In Claudius's quarters, Drusilla pours some wine into a golden goblet for Kirk. He glances at her, then takes a sip. She watches anxiously.
Rega.
He pops a grape into his mouth.
Excellent.
I was concerned. I am ordered to please you.
I've been in some strange worlds, strange customs. Perhaps this is considered torture here.
Torture? I do not understand. I do not wish to see you tortured in any way.
She kisses him.
At the first sign of pain, you will tell me.
You'll be the first to know.
They kiss passionately. Later, Kirk lies fully clothed on a couch, fast asleep. Claudius wakes him.
Captain?
He gets up with a start.
I'm sorry I was detained. Should we have our little talk now?
So far on this planet, we've kept you rather busy. I don't wonder you slept through the afternoon.
Two guards stand at the door. Claudius pours wine.
By the way, one of the communicators we took from you is missing. Was it my pretty Drusilla, by any chance?
Merrick comes in.
See if he has it. Not that I would have punished her. I would have blamed you. You're a Roman, Kirk, or you should have been. It's not of this person.
No, Proconsul.
I am sorry I was detained. I trust that it was nothing further you required.
Nothing, except perhaps an explanation.
Because you're a man, I owe you that. You must die shortly, and because you are a man. Would you leave us, Merrick? The thoughts of one man to another cannot possibly interest you.
Merrick's face sours. He turns stiffly and leaves.
Because you are a man, I gave you some last hours as a man.
I appreciate that.
Unfortunately, we must demonstrate that defiance is intolerable.
Of course.
But I've learned to respect you. I promise you, you will die easily, quickly.
I thank you. And my friends.
When that time comes, the same, of course.
He raises his goblet of wine to Kirk and takes a sip.
Guards!
The two guards walk over.
Take him to the arena. Oh, we've preempted 15 minutes on the early show for you. In full color. We guarantee you a splendid audience. You may not understand because you're centuries beyond anything as crude as television.
I've heard it was similar.
The guards follow Kirk out. On the Enterprise.
Enterprise log. Engineer Scott reporting. All banks in readiness for disruption of power sources on the planet's surface.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Before tonight's first heat, a simple execution. But stay tuned to this channel. There's a lot of excitement coming your way.
Claudius calls to the Centurion.
Make it a quick single thrust.
The Centurion turns to Kirk and readies his sword.
Don't move. You'll only die harder.
Rattles! If you want death, fight me!
Guards shoot Flavius dead. Kirk stabs one guard and knocks the other one out.
Now, Mr. Chekhov, activate.
There's a blackout in the arena.
Guards, don't let him escape! Guards!
Grabbing a gun, Kirk runs down to the cells. The lights come back on.
Stand back.
He shoots through the lock.
Obsolete but effective.
What happened, Jim?
What did they do to you, Captain?
They threw me a few curves. No time to explain.
Guards surround them.
Halt! We're in each other's line of fire.
I pity you, Captain Merrick. But at least watch and see how men die.
Swords only!
The guards draw swords and advance. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy fight them. Claudius watches excitedly. Merrick opens a communicator.
Starship, lock in on this. Three to beat.
Claudius stabs Merrick in the back. Clutching the communicator, Merrick lurches towards Kirk and throws it at him.
Enterprise to Captain Kirk. Ready to beam up three.
The guards shoot at them as they beam up. Claudius and the guards stare into the empty cell.
Captain's log, stardate 4041.7. Note, commendation, Engineering Officer Scott. Despite enormous temptation and strong personal feelings, he obeyed the prime directive. This temporary blackout of the city below resulted in no interference with the society and yet saved the lives of myself and the landing party.
Thank you, Captain.
Scotty passes Spock and McCoy as they step out of the lift. The pair walk over to Kirk.
Gentlemen.
Captain, I see on your report Flavius was killed. I am sorry. I like that huge sun worshiper.
I wish we could have examined that belief of his more closely. It seems illogical for a sun worshiper to develop a philosophy of total brotherhood. Sun worship is usually a primitive superstition religion.
I'm afraid you have it all wrong, Mr. Spock, all of you. I've been monitoring some of their old-style radio waves. The Empire spokesman trying to ridicule their religion. But he couldn't.
Uhura stands up and comes over to them.
Well, don't you understand? It's not the sun up in the sky. It's the Son of God.
Caesar and Christ, they had them both. And the word is spreading only now.
Philosophy of total love and total brotherhood.
It will replace their imperial Rome, but it will happen in their 20th century.
Wouldn't it be something to watch, to be a part of? To see it happen all over again.
They smile thoughtfully.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit, ahead, warp factor one.
Aye, sir.
This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.